Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. I'm Sonia.
And I'm Willie.
And today we are discussing Time Fugitives Part 1, which is Episode 7 in Season 2. And this was a real time traveling episode. It was a really interesting one.
With all our favorite time traveling friends.
Yeah, that's right.
Cable, Bishop, Forge, Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed this episode. It's a two-part episode, and we're only going to talk about part one today. But these are among my two favorite X-Men episodes.
Really?
Yes. Hmm. Mainly for the way it starts. I love how it opens in the future, but not in Bishop's future. Bishop resides in the year 2055,
mm-hmm.
which is its own post of, or its own apocalyptic nightmare.
Yep, it's coming up on us fast here too.
Well, hopefully not too fast. Cable, this opens up in Cable's future. He resides in the fantastic year 3999,
mm-hmm.
and the action opens in New York City in that crazy year. And it's just, there's something interesting about how Cable is time traveling between the past and the present with a lot of regularity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's been revealed yet that Cable's actually a time traveler.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure.
I think it is.
I don't think they hint at it in other episodes, but they don't. It hasn't been explicitly shown that he's from the future.
Okay.
He's just kind of a mysterious, you know, wild card.
Right.
So now I think we're seeing for sure that Cable is from the future.
Mm-hmm.
And
the future's a real mess.
Yeah, but to that point though, it's cool that Cable is like waging this war across time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever, and we see what's going on in his present day. Excuse me. He's, like, leading his own band of mutants.
Mm-hmm.
What were you going to say about the future? It's a mess.
Yeah. Well, the future always seems to be a mess when we get a glimpse into it.
Right. With the X-Men.
In these cases. Right. But there's, like, all these tornadoes with laser beams shooting out of them.
Let's not get to that point just yet.
Why?
Well, because first he's just... Let's just describe... Because that's, like, a key plot point.
Okay.
So first, what's going on is...
I'm diving in here.
I know. I'm holding you back.
Go ahead.
First, Cable and his mutant friends are fighting a bunch of robots in some New York City rubble.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an interesting look to these robots. Most of them kind of look like the robots from Terminator.
Right.
And our friend George in a previous episode talked about this, how he thinks a lot of the X-Men ripped off Terminator, or a lot of the show did.
Mm.
And it might have been, Terminator might have taken a lot from the X-Men universe, too, because James Cameron was a fan of Marvel Comics. I don't know. That's probably more a subconscious steal on James Cameron's part.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably true that, at least for the purposes of this cartoon, the creators were inspired a bit by the Terminator franchise.
Maybe. They're very, like, skeletal-looking robots.
Right, yeah.
Like metal skeletons, which is creepy. You know, that's, like, a useful device.
Right. But beyond those robots, we actually see another robot, which is... It's bizarre. We see War Machine,
mm-hmm.
who is, for all the Iron Man fans out there, is sort of like... one of the alternate Iron Man power suits that I guess the guy's name is Colonel Rhodes wears that costume.
Mm-hmm.
Costume. That suit of armor.
Right.
But it's just strange that War Machine makes a random cameo in this robot army here.
Right.
But then, jumping way ahead, talking about diving in, we see later a bizarre cameo from S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm, yeah.
And we see Nick Fury, the white Nick Fury,
right.
Before Sam Jackson sort of supplanted the character.
Mm-hmm.
We see him, and we see War Machine.
Yeah.
Again, mm-hmm. in the present day.
He's timeless.
Yeah, I guess. That's just bizarre. It's cool, but I don't know what... If that was a mistake or if it was intentional, but it's still a nice touch for some reason.
Yeah, it's cool.
We get the broader Marvel universe. It's always nice to see. Anyway, this episode, now let's talk about these tornadoes. So Cable and his friends are shooting their lasers at the robots. They're having a battle, and it looks pretty bad. It looks like they're getting beaten. One of Cable's friends says, "We're being overrun."
Yeah.
And he says, "Then counterattack. There's no retreating." And that seems like the kind of war directive from a losing side, desperate. So it's not like things are going well, but things go from bad to worse with these tornadoes.
Right.
And so these tornadoes come out of nowhere.
They've got yellow laser beams shooting out of them.
Yeah.
Or into them. I don't know what exactly. So, and it seems like these, like, scary robots are kind of, like, walking out of the tornadoes at times.
Well,
or
through
them or something.
No, I think they're also being destroyed by the tornadoes.
Well, anyway.
It's hard to say, but
a lot of robots and tornadoes.
So, but anyway, like, these, if I didn't mention, these robots are Apocalypse's army.
Right.
And we see Apocalypse standing on some ruined skyscraper shouting at the distance, too. He's leading this force.
Yeah.
And he's also taken aback by these tornadoes. Mm-hmm. He knows what it is. He says, a temporal storm? I think that's what he says.
I don't remember.
He says something to that effect.
But we get a little more info. So, in the future, apparently, Siri already exists.
Well, it's Super Siri.
Super Siri.
Ultra Super Siri.
Her name is Computer.
Right, yeah. And she is this, like, awesome rectangular cube.
Yeah, and a rectangular prism.
That comes out of Cable's robot arm. And he sort of takes it out and, like, holds it in his hand, too.
Yeah.
He can put it in the back of his arm, too.
But it totally is, like, a Super Siri. It's, like, a more advanced version of AI than anything close to what we have now. Because he literally just talks into it and he's like, computer, what is going on?
And the computer, like, knows exactly what's going
imagine if you could do that any time in your life when you're confused. Yeah. Like,
it's like, computer, what's going on? Your life's a mess. You're late on the rent. You're ugly. Nobody likes you. That's what's going on. So, I mean, you know, right.
Computer life coach.
Yeah. So, this computer is really cool. And it has that Siri voice, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really predicted that in this X-Men show. This really sort of detached female voice. But anyway, what's going on is that Bishop is on another time-traveling mission. And he has changed the past again. And his actions having changed the past is destroying the future. But what's interesting is that the future is being destroyed in real time in, like, a piecemeal basis.
Right. So the tornadoes are not weather.
Right.
They're time reconstructing itself.
Yes. Which is, it's definitely cool that that's how they're imagining it. But,
yeah.
Like, I mean, obviously, time travel is a completely speculative, like, fake pseudoscience, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
So no one would know what could happen if you really changed the past. But in my mind, it would all be instantaneous.
You would think, but it's like instantaneous is still a relative term. This is why time travel is like such a just crazy thing to conceive of, you know?
Because
it's like the whole idea that it's an instant, it's like the instant comes and goes on a timeline, right?
But if you think of it, like, time in itself is also an illusion, according to the world of theoretical physics.
Yeah.
Because it's really all one big moment happening simultaneously.
Uh-huh.
So the past, present, and future are probably existing all at once. So in a way, you could, like, lend credence to these time tornadoes, because it's not like... I think, like, I don't necessarily know. Obviously, I'm talking out of my butt, but it's possible that in this case, that if it's far enough in the future, that time would need to, like, correct itself in some weird way like that, and it wouldn't jive with our. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, that's why, like, time travel is such a crazy thing,
but fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why this is fun, because they're taking extremely abstract, completely, like, borderline ridiculous ideas, though based in science, and imagining what they might look like, how they would play out.
Well, it's only because we're, like, adult nerds that we really think this far into it, right? When you're a kid and you're watching this episode, you're just like, yeah, cool, time travel.
Well, when I was a kid watching this episode, I just thought it was all true. I was like, yeah, this is what happens, obviously.
Right, obviously.
Time tornadoes, you know.
Yeah.
Magical computers. So that's, like, the crazy opening of this episode. And it's very exciting. It's very interesting. I'm super compelled immediately as the viewer. And then we go back in time, but not all the way back to the present, the 90s, where the X-Men are. Now our past. There once was a time when the show was in the present, and that was cool, too. We go to the year 2055, as we mentioned. That's Bishop's time. He's arriving back in his present, but not from
It's
the mission
where we,
that it's not from the mission that is causing all the new time disruptions. It's from when we last saw Bishop.
Right, yeah, where
which
we
is
left
a little bit confusing
actually.
Too. Yeah.
Well, not really. If you've been watching the show, it's a nice continuity, I think, actually.
You're right, yeah. But I'm saying in the moment of watching this episode, it could be a bit confusing because...
If you hadn't seen the previous episodes.
Yeah, yeah. And you're like... Because we got a glimpse of Bishop in the temporal storm in the opening of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So you think like, oh, maybe he's coming back from that. But no, he's actually... It was separate.
Right. So where we did leave him off like several episodes ago... Yeah, ago.
Right.
I forget what's... actual episode that was, but he's coming back to the lab and we see the Wolverine skeleton.
Yeah, Wolverine's dead
inside this like glass containment tube, but you know it's him because he's got the adamantium
claws
out. Yeah, and it's revealed to him that like the past isn't actually fixed, all the things that he went back and changed.
Right. Well, Bishop, let's remind the listeners, Bishop went back in time to prevent the assassination of Senator Kelly.
Right.
A prominent mutant opponent. But by saving him and the X-Men then saving him again, Senator Kelly becomes president and he's all for mutant rights.
Right.
So that seems like a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where Bishop's coming back from. And Forge tells him... you know, you failed.
Right.
The future is still ruined. But he's like, what do you mean? I saved Senator Kelly. He's like, oh, not from that. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Right. That's the craziest thing about this conversation, though, between Forge and Bishop, is that both of them are going back and forth being like, well, don't you remember this happening?
Yeah.
No, that's crazy. Don't you remember this happening?
Right.
And it's like, both of them know how time travel works,
well,
like, within
Forge,
this reality. Like, why do they think the other one would remember things?
Well, Bishop, who knows what he thinks? But Forge is a genius. And
you know what I'm saying, though?
Forge puts it together. He's like, oh, you've been outside time.
Yeah.
I haven't, so my memories would have changed.
Yeah, right.
So Forge gets a clue. It doesn't make sense how Bishop would arrive back at Forge's lab and that, like, Forge might be expecting him or know him based because the entire past has been changed. Like, that in itself is, like, a paradox. I mean, like, there's a lot of paradoxes in this.
It's bound to happen.
Right, yeah.
What can you do?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's more paradoxes than we're going to mention, probably. But anyway, Forge explains what's since happened. He says, oh, there's this plague, by the way, and it's, like, killed all most of the mutants. I guess not him.
Right.
Forge lived.
Right.
It's killed all the mutants. The future is terrible. It's still ruined and awful. Although it does look a little... His lab looks a little shinier than we last left it. And I feel like previously his lab was, like, in a, like, semi-underground hovel, and it was really crappy.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's, like, in a shinier little building than a skyscraper.
Really?
That was my impression.
Oh, I thought it was exactly the same as
It's not exactly
before.
The same, and it's definitely not. That's something I noticed as a kid that
was
always kind of, I thought was interesting, too.
Because
things have changed. I guess it's good that Forge, like I said, speaking of paradoxes, it's good that Forge still managed to build a time machine that Bishop could travel through.
Yeah, totally.
Return from the past and travel again.
Yep.
So anyway, Forge tells Bishop, and this plague, it killed all the X-Men. And that is like... a crazy trigger moment for Bishop. He's
right.
Like, oh, the X-Men, I'm going back immediately.
Yeah.
But which to me I thought was kind of funny because he didn't really get along with the X-Men that well when he was last with
them. No, but
he
understands their importance in society. He understands their role in history, I think.
Yeah.
So.
I guess. So it's in that moment that Bishop jumps back into the time portal. He's going to stop the plague. And he has very little information. Because this is a whole future that's happened that he doesn't barely know about, but he just wants to fix it. Bishop seems like a guy, he's addicted to time travel.
Yeah.
It's like if you could go back and make your own life perfect, and every time you jump back to the future to see how the effects were, and there's like slightly like wrong again.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I got to fix that.
Well, it's the classic, you know, Homer Simpson with the broken toaster.
Yeah.
And like... He doesn't bother to stick around and figure things out, really. At some point, he just realizes, like, all right, if I get into some alternate future that's, like, not good, I have to go back right away.
Yeah.
Like, can't handle...
Right.
You know.
And I think... I like this line from Forge as Bishop jumps back into the time portal. It's, like, as Bishop is, like, in time traveling.
Yeah.
It's, like, a voiceover. He says, there are many possible futures. We may never know to which our actions will lead. And to me, that's almost like... Forge, why'd you build a time machine? You know, it's like, obviously time travel's dangerous. You're really messing up the space-time continuum.
Mm.
You know, you're letting this crazy lunatic Bishop go back. Why doesn't Forge go back? He's, like, way smarter than Bishop. You know, I don't, like, Bishop
well,
is just
older,
this guy.
Right? Maybe he can't handle the combat or whatever.
He looks like he's in good shape. He looks as muscular as any other X-Men in this show.
Not as muscular and, like,
well, Bishop's
ready as
like,
Bishop.
Bishop's on steroids, but Forge looks, he's fit. And he's got a metal leg. I mean, it's cool. He's a cyborg.
So, wait, what are you arguing here? That he shouldn't have built a time machine or that he should be the one that goes back to use the time machine?
I'm saying that, like, yeah, both. Like, don't – maybe time machine's a bad idea. Forge himself admits it in that moment.
Uh-huh.
And also, like, don't send an idiot back in time who is not as smart as you, Forge, who, like, understands things.
All right. So, all you scientists out there, all you theoretical scientists, just word to the wise.
Yeah, don't send back your Marty McFlys or your Bishops. Like, you probably should do your own dirty work.
But isn't that the point of all of those stories? We're all Marty McFlys.
Well, in these stories, yeah, because that's what makes time travel interesting, that, like, a semi-ordinary person goes back.
Relatable.
Right, who is going to make mistakes, not, like, a careful scientist.
Hmm.
Right. Although Rick and Morty would bucks against that trend because Rick, the scientist, is extremely dangerous.
Yeah, but Morty's the relatable one.
He's relatable, but also dumb. But Rick's smart, but he's completely, like, an
insane.
Agent of chaos. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, so then, all right, so Bishop's going back in time again. And then we're in the present day, which is the 90s, now in the past. Jubilee is at the mall. Her CD player, her portable CD player broke. Do you want to explain to people what a CD player is?
Do I need to?
No, I guess not. For our audience.
I don't think anybody's listening. Well, maybe. Maybe someone listening is young enough that they don't know what
maybe
a CD player
in the year
is,
3999 or they're listening to this podcast,
yeah.
They might need to know what a CD player
That's
is.
That's fine. They can just take out their rectangular prism and ask it.
That's true. Yeah. Go on.
So anyway, Julie has this portable CD player. I guess it's broken again.
She's taking it to the electronics store in the mall.
Because of her finger fireworks.
It is, yeah. That's totally the implication. Because Storm tells her, like, oh, you must learn to control your powers.
Oh, right, yeah. Okay, so she takes it to the place in the mall to get fixed.
And the guy at the mall is pissed at her because she's been here many times.
Yeah, he's like, what's with that kid?
Yeah, because he goes in the back and fixes these things. That's like that's a fancy job. I don't think did that exist?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, okay.
Radio repair shops and stuff?
Yeah.
That existed.
I suppose, but still, like, I don't know.
But you would have to pay every time, so if anything, you'd think he wouldn't be pissed about it. He's making money off this girl who keeps breaking her thing.
It's just funny how now I feel like if you have an iPod or something and it breaks, you take it to the Apple store and they just give you a new one and charge you $100. They don't
fix it, though.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
Maybe
they exchange ones.
Yeah, right. They'll refurbish it themselves and give it to someone else.
Yeah.
But the one they give you is not the one. It's not your personal one.
Yeah, right. Because they don't want you to have to wait for it. They want to, you know, give you timely customer service.
Yeah.
That didn't exist back then.
So anyway, while the guy is repairing Jubilee's CD player, they've been tracked by one of the, like, Friends of Humanity goons.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got his own iWatch. Again, we see these iWatches, like, way out of time.
Right.
You know, he's got, like, the X-Men faces on them. He's punching through.
We're not even huge Apple proponents.
I know.
You and
I
don't
care.
Know what this is. But
well,
anyway.
It's just these are all – they predicted all these Apple products.
I guess, yeah.
Maybe Steve Jobs, you know, would like the show. Probably not. But anyway, so he's been following Storm and Jubilee around. He knows they're mutants. And he sneaks into the CD repair shop back room and sprays his, like, plague gun at this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he shoots this purple mist at him. And the guy gets sick. And then I just thought, just another little side silly note, while he shoots the plague gun, he just puts a napkin over his nose and slowly walks out. I don't think a napkin's gonna...
No, it's not gonna do it, huh?
Yeah, especially when you're shooting, like, a purple mist in a big room.
Yeah.
That's dangerous.
It's a decorative gesture, you know?
I guess. So, but anyway, so now the CD guy, he gets sick. He's got the plague. And we see what the plague is, finally.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this... It's like, looks like a green, it's like you're infected with a green circuit board in your skin.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And it makes this congealing noise, like, kind of noise as it comes onto your skin and body.
It digitizes your skin.
Yeah. You know, and that reminded me, you know, I couldn't have been the only one, but fans of this television show, when they were watching Iron Man 2, Tony Stark has this disease. He's poisoned by palladium.
Right.
Because he has the power module in his chest,
mm-hmm.
and his skin gets infected in this way, in a weird way. Like,
sort of,
his blood is like spirals out in this weird techno way. It goes up his neck and on his chest. Mm-hmm. And
The color scheme is different, but
the color scheme's different, but like
pattern is like the same. Yeah,
and I was reminded of this show. I immediately thought of that, and that was years ago. Obviously, Iron Man 2 came out, but it's like I can't be the only one that thought that too. So yeah. I really feel like another. I don't know, maybe it's a trope in comic books where you would have these futuristic viruses that was in a lot of Marvel comics or something.
Yeah, and like how else are you going to show it?
Right, yeah, right, because you're right, maybe it's just an abstract presentation of it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this guy's got the virus, and then immediately the Friends of Humanity goon makes a big scene at the mall saying, look, the mutants are given the plague, and causes a riot at the mall, and Storm, who is not wearing her Storm outfit, she's wearing her...
It's her casual 90s wear.
Well, it's fancy, though. It's like her red power blazer and black pants and stuff.
Yeah, well.
So, and also I thought it was funny that here the X-Men are at the mall again. This is like a frequent return setting for
them.
They
live in Westchester. Of course they're at the mall. Where else are they going to come?
And it's the 90s, too.
I mean, no offense, Westchester, but like that's what goes on, you know?
And that's another thing. I mean, like, I don't know how frequently people go to the mall these days. I mean, I don't go to the mall that much.
Well, you don't live in a place that has malls.
Yeah, but also, the whole culture has changed because we've got like things like Amazon and online shopping.
Uh-huh.
Like malls were definitely like a thing in the 90s. There was no Amazon. Uh-huh. If you wanted to get like some fancy boutique items, you go to the mall.
Right.
So it's just cool that like a lot of action happens at the mall. I feel like malls are going to get more and more outdated as time goes on, and that this will become more of like a relic of its time.
You think so? I don't know.
No?
I mean...
Mall's still going strong?
Anybody living outside of a major metro area probably still needs to go to the mall a lot.
I guess, but like I said, people do a lot of online shopping.
Yeah.
So, and the online deals are usually better than what you get at the mall. You're usually paying a markup.
I don't know.
Neither do I. Anyway, there's a riot now at the mall with this plague spreading and the guy blaming mutants. Storm has one of her classic power lines. Bring forth mist to blind the hatred.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, and Jubilee and Storm make an escape. Excuse me again. And we're back at the X-Mansion. They're doing a test on Jubilee to make sure she isn't spreading the plague. I mean, the X-Men don't know about this plague.
Right.
And she's healthy, with the exception of not eating enough vegetables, admonished by Beast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I keep bringing up these outfits, but they're funny to me. We see another casual outfit by Jean. Do you remember what she was wearing?
Whoa.
Don't make fun of me.
She has on 90s clothes. She has like pleated pants, mm-hmm. and like a...
Like a fancy blue button-up shirt. Yeah.
Why are you so fascinated with their outfits?
Because it's the 90s. I don't know. I just think the fashion, casual fashion
like
the of the 90s.
Pop culture stuff.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's like retro to me. It's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like to see the... it's like, because most of the time in the show, they're just wearing their costumes.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's funny when the animators dress them in casual outfits. Like, what would they... Because it reveals a little bit about their characters. Maybe in, like, the most subtle... smallest way,
mm-hmm.
but still, like, you know, any drip of extra characterization we can get out of the show,
you're into it.
I'm into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, like, you know, like to me, Jean is kind of like she's like a fancy, like you said, like Westchester Stepford wife or something.
Uh-huh.
A little bit, right?
Stepford wife? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe not Stepford wife. That's not the right comparison.
She's not like a creepy robot woman.
She's just like a fancy suburbanite.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, a young woman suburbanite. And you know, like I said, like the X-Men, I've said in previous episodes, the X-Men, they live high and large off Professor X's gold card, and they buy themselves a lot of fancy clothing. Uh-huh. So I just think that's all funny to me.
You just want extra windows into that world.
Yeah, Sonya's just staring at me like I'm crazy. Anyway, so now Beast is motivated to discover what this virus is. He breaks into the local hospital and does his own examination. I always find it funny when Beast goes on these spy missions, which I believe he does, like, several times. I mean, that's what he got arrested for in the first place,
mm-hmm.
is that he broke into a controlled facility
mm-hmm.
for the purposes of, like, deleting files or just breaking into computer systems. I mean, here he's doing another similar thing. And Beast is not, like, he doesn't make for, like, a real inconspicuous figure. He's graceful in breaking into the building, but if anyone were to walk in, it's like he's immediately recognizable, he's world famous, you know, it's like, he really takes these risks.
Yeah, well, this one goes off without a hitch.
Maybe this is why they really need Morph, because Morph would have been, like, the best spy in the group to just, like, Morph, go to the hospital and check out
or
these.
Or, like, an invisible team member or something.
Yeah, call up the invisible woman from the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And get her help.
Well.
Or actually Jean Grey, because she could just project, like, a mental image where people don't even see her.
I guess.
Which we saw in the X-Men movie.
But
the
Beast
Apocalypse.
Is the doctor, so he has all the scientific knowledge. He knows what he's looking at when he
Jean
gets
Grey
there.
Is technically a doctor, too.
Right, but a different type of doctor.
Well, actually, I don't think it's established in this show that Jean Grey is a doctor.
No, I guess not.
It's established in the movies. In the first movie, we've talked about before, but the opening scene of Jean addressing Congress, she's referred to as Dr. Jean Grey.
Right.
And we see her a lot in that movie, like, in, you know, the medical labs, treating Wolverine and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she's younger in this show.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe she hasn't...
I'm like, it's what's crazy to me is, like, I can't remember her being a doctor in the comic books either. Like, that's like a detail I don't remember at all them exploring. Maybe in the movie they just said she's a doctor to, like, make her have the Beast role. Because Beast wasn't in the movie at first.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So I'm not sure. But for some reason, Dr. Jean Grey sounds familiar beyond the movie. Like, maybe it is from the comics as well.
I don't know.
I don't know either. Well, she's smart, too.
Right. Anyway, Beast is the man for the job this
yes.
time.
He's the man for the job. He discovers the secrets of the virus. He discovers that the virus is man-made.
Mm-hmm.
It's not natural, and it's not from mutants.
Right.
So that's, like, a big revelation. So, which makes sense, because Jubilee isn't sick. And, but then, okay, so Bishop has now arrived from the past. And concurrent with that, we see that the government's taking action here. They're quarantining mutants. And in this case, we see them in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
They're being quarantined as the plague's spreading, and fear the plague is spreading. And in the quarantine building, we see our old friend, the nerdy mutant with glasses who has no special powers.
Yeah.
He wears, like, a purple vest and has bright, like, bushy orange fur in his chest.
Poor guy.
And he looks like a werewolf, kind of.
Yeah.
And he's got glasses and a nerdy Woody Allen voice.
Uh-huh.
And he's just always at the worst places. And he's always being attacked by the Friends of Humanity. Because there's a riot outside this quarantine center. And that's where Bishop arrives. Bishop, in his infinite wisdom, is first trying to talk sense into this crowd, saying, "The plague's not caused by mutants. Stand back, you fools." And, of course, they're not listening to him, so he starts blasting the area,
mm-hmm.
creating, like, a dividing zone with his energy beams. And that causes, like, more of a riot. The Friends of Humanity there, they start attacking Bishop. The X-Men show up on the scene, too. They're spurred into action. And I like that when they notice that Bishop's there, Wolverine refers to him as a... He says, "What's that time jockey doing here?"
Yeah.
I just like that phrase, time jockey.
Right.
I feel like that could be a whole franchise. He's a time jockey. He travels through time on a horse. No, I don't know. And so now there's, like, a fight scene between the X-Men and the Friends of Humanity. And it's worth noting, too, that as they're fighting these Friends of Humanity guys, Storm gets shot again. She's always being laser blasted in the chest in this show.
Uh-huh.
I feel like she's been blasted by Sentinels, and she's been definitely been blasted by the Friends of Humanity or police officers, like, two or three times.
Yeah.
So she is getting a lot of, like...
Good thing the lasers are always set to stun.
I know, but fine. Still, it's
well,
like,
it's because she's always the one, like, flying up in the sky, like, raining down hailstorms and stuff.
She doesn't have as much mobility as Rogue, too, with her flying, because I feel like she's lofted on wind.
It's because she's, like, using her powers.
Right.
And that's when
it's a lot
of
concentration.
Opportune moments for them to shoot her, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, the X-Men sort of, they deflate the situation. Storm causes a rainstorm that just makes people run away.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I guess. I mean, it's just funny that people in full riot mode, but the second it rains a little bit, they're like, "I gotta get out of here."
No, that was like a real rainstorm.
It was like a violent rainstorm.
Raining heavy, and people like went to seek shelter.
Right.
Smart.
Yeah. And then there's another little cutaway where the leader of the Friends of Humanity, this guy named Creed, is talking to the scientist, random scientist at their base. And they're talking about the plague, and it's sort of revealed that the scientist guy is Apocalypse in disguise. He's the one behind this plague. He wants to use a plague to kill everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into more of that a little bit later.
Yeah.
And then here we go, another one of our favorite settings in the show, the X-Men at a public hearing. So this time, oftentimes when we've seen the X-Men at public hearings, they're just in their street clothes. Here they're in full costume.
Yeah.
And Bishop, and they're all in the first row, their senator's there, and Bishop is sitting there in the first row with his gun in his holster, like fully visible for everyone to see. Mm-hmm. And this, and to me that was like, this is a world where Second Amendment rights are fully appreciated. Like, nobody stops Bishop from entering a public room with the senators and taking his gun away.
You know? Yeah.
Or allowing people to, like, wear their, like, sleek spandex body armor outfits, too. Well, like, no one's concerned about that.
They can't bar your outfits. The gun is a totally different story, but this was written in, like, a pre-9/11 world. So,
right.
You know.
What does pre-9/11 have to do with it? The people are just a little more cavalier.
Yeah, I think so.
No, I don't know. I still
maybe not.
I don't think you could bring like a highly dangerous rifle into a public hearing with U.S. senators.
Yeah, I guess not.
So it's just a funny detail. So the guy Creed, the Friends of Humanity leader, is giving the testimony.
So aptly named.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's an important detail that'll come up in a later episode. Mm-hmm. I won't spoil it for you, but. So Creed's saying, mutants are the reason that the plague's happening. We have to get rid of all of them. And there's a senator named Senator Good. He kind of defends. He says, all right, we've heard enough of you. Let's hear from Hank McCoy, Beast. Hmm. You know, he's a scientist. And as Beast is about to give his testimony, I like this is another little racist detail where Creed's backing away from the podium and he has his napkin over his nose because he feels like Beast has the plague and also...
Well, not because he actually thinks that, just like he's
right.
showing... He's making a show of it.
He's making a show that, like, we should be afraid of these mutants. They're freaks. They carry disease.
Yeah.
So that's, like, a really, like, a nice touch showing people, you know, how evil racism is.
Yeah.
Like you said, making a show of as if, like, we have legitimate reason to be afraid of these people. You
right.
know? And, but just before Beast speaks... The guy, the whole plan for this Creed guy is he's got a little plague gun in his pocket and he's going to spray Beast. But Bishop sees this, he attacks him, and in doing so, Creed infects himself. There's a riot at the courthouse. The X-Men escape somehow. There's no security again.
Of course.
Right. They discover the plot, and it's at this point the X-Men decide. Oh, another little fun detail.
Uh-huh.
I like this. As Rogue is fighting the Friends of Humanity guys at the courthouse, because
mm-hmm.
there's some goons in the court, too.
Yeah.
She calls them rednecks.
Yeah.
Which, you know, to me is like a not-so-subtle indication that if these guys weren't against mutants, they would just be, like, maybe in the KKK or something.
Right, yeah.
However, though, I have to say that, like... We've seen the members of the Friends of Humanity are a multi-diverse collection of people.
Right.
It's not just white people, and it's not just Southerners. But still, it's a little telling that slipped into the script that Rogue refers to these, like, bigots as rednecks.
Hmm.
You know, so, interesting. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay.
All right. All right. So the X-Men decide they have to attack the Friend of Humanity base because they now know that... That's who's manufacturing the plague.
Right.
It's a cool scene. Right before they attack the base, Jean does a mental scan of the area and discovers a great power there.
Mm-hmm.
And
what
it's Apocalypse.
It
right.
Yeah.
But she doesn't know that yet.
Yeah.
But she passes out a little bit again as she discovers that.
I feel like he could make a drinking game out of that.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Every time Storm gets shot, every time Jean...
Every time Jean faints a little bit. Yeah, she doesn't, like, full-on pass out this time, but she's knocked back into Cyclops' arms.
Uh-huh.
And as they break into the base, we see, again, Cyclops' cool tunneling technique
mm-hmm.
that he uses with his eye beams.
Yep, love
it's
it.
Like, yeah, anytime you need to, like, break into an underground bunker, call up Cyclops.
Yeah.
And he'll just make, like, a little tunnel.
He's got you.
I don't know how those tunnels don't cave in on themselves.
Details.
But, I don't know. I guess the force of his optic blast really, like...
Well, so where does all that
dirt.
Rock matter go, you know?
Yeah.
I
mean, the force of his blast just really pounds it into, like, a hard shape,
it
I guess.
It doesn't really make sense, but it's fine.
That's fine.
I'll
You're
buy
right.
it.
Yeah. It looks cool. It's cool to see him use his powers for that.
Yeah.
Speaking of which... You know, they do use him. You do see him use his powers for that purpose.
Uh-huh.
But most of the time when you see Cyclops use his powers on this show, it is just for blasting things.
Yeah.
His powers actually have some cooler... uses in the comics.
Right. Like, he can, some additional elements.
He can, like, use his visor to, like, really fine-tune his beam.
Yeah.
And he can ricochet shots, like, off, like, a million different surfaces to, like, make an impossible shot.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that it's because he has an innate sense of, like, perfect geometric, like, awareness or something, which is, like, a bizarre, another bizarre, inexplicable power.
So he should be a really, like, ace billiards player?
Yeah, that's part of it. Like, yeah. I think that's, like, something to do with that. But it's like, they don't really ever show that on the show, I don't think. Maybe in one episode later on, I don't remember. But it's like, that would have been cool to see in an animated show, Cyclops, like, using his, like, ricochet powers, too.
Hmm.
Anyway. So they bust into the lab. They discover Apocalypse is there. They really freak out when Apocalypse is there.
Yeah.
Like, Wolverine pops his claws. Cyclops, like, it's like, Apocalypse! Ah!
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Of course.
And Apocalypse, like, lets out some great lines. He's really annoyed because the X-Men immediately destroy his, like, vats of virus.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, he says, one of the first things he says, because Creed is also surprised to learn that this scientist that he knew is a mutant. He says, "You're a mutant." And Apocalypse says, "I am as far beyond mutants as they are beyond you. I am eternal." And then he says other crazy stuff. He refers to the X-Men as annoying insects, and nothing can stop the Apocalypse. That's about as, like, straightforward as Apocalypse gets as far as dialogue.
Pretty much, but it's kind of, you know, it's almost a shame for him because he's saying all that stuff here in, like, you know, 1990-whatever.
Right.
And then, like, if you think back to the opening of the episode where it was, like, almost the year 4000 and he's still trying to make an apocalypse happen over the Earth. It's like,
he's a
how
slow,
frustrating.
He's a slow planner.
He's playing the long game.
Yeah. And then he has another really great line here that makes you think, stop and think about things. He says, "I bring the purity of oblivion to your world." And that's a pretty heady line for a kid's show. Like, "I bring the purity of oblivion." You know, like, that's like a bizarre... You know, there's this...
vocab builder.
Yeah. There's this group out there. I'm struggling to remember their name. But basically, they believe that human beings should stop breeding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their whole philosophy. They don't want to kill anyone, but they just says it's. I think it's called, like, the voluntary extinction movement, something along those lines. And they're just, like, this totally insane fringe group. It might just be one guy at the website, but he just wants human beings to stop breeding, the human race to end, so that Mother Earth can repair itself and, you know, just grow over, you know, all the damage we've caused to it. And so I think it's called Vehement. I might be wrong about that. Somebody looked that up. Hmm. But I discovered that website in the early 2000s as, like, a joke. But I think it's real. And so, but that's what that line makes me think of, that, like, there's people who think that, like, if only human beings just didn't exist, then, like, things would be a paradise again.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So that's
cool. I guess Apocalypse is the founder of the movement, huh?
Right. Yeah, he might be that guy who made that website. We never know.
Yeah, there you go.
And also, it's interesting that Apocalypse refers to the X-Men as mutant filth as well.
Uh-huh.
He's also kind of... He's just racist against humans and mutants. Yeah. He sees them as all... As, like, vermin, insects, you know.
Yeah, yeah. He's after total wipeout.
Right. And then... And so, it seems like the X-Men have saved the day. However, Apocalypse grows to, like, 100 feet tall and zaps the X-Men into dust with his purple laser beams. And which made you wonder, like, why he didn't do that in previous episodes. Like, he could so easily just kill the X-Men, you know. And when we last saw Apocalypse, he didn't really challenge the X-Men in that way. He just escaped in his interstellar spaceship after they beat up the Four Horsemen.
Yeah.
And I was like, why doesn't Apocalypse fight them? He's so much stronger.
Right.
And it also makes you wonder, it's like, what could stop Apocalypse? All he has to do is just grow to 100 feet tall and just wipe out the entire human race. It might take him, like, a year or two to just physically walk everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, just, like, nothing can hurt him.
Yeah.
So if you want to just kill everyone, just walk around and shoot them.
Right, because they don't even really reveal that he has a weakness of any kind.
No, I don't think he really does.
So...
So, yeah, I mean, so Apocalypse, you're right. There's something funny about the way he's been waging this war of his. And, you know, it's like he gets lazy at times or he just, like, I don't know.
He has other worlds to conquer.
He does. I think he's definitely only Earthbound.
Really?
Yeah, he's really concerned with Earth. He doesn't care about other worlds.
Doesn't make sense.
Maybe in the comic books he does. I think he definitely travels to other planets at times.
Yeah.
For his own purposes. But it's all about, like, controlling the Earth.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll see, like, his ambitions definitely grow in later episodes. In, like, what I consider some the best multi-part episodes in season four, where it's, like, Apocalypse and Time, essentially. The time-traveling episodes. Those are amazing. That's, like, the real apex of all this time-traveling stuff, is those episodes.
Right.
Those are, like,
this
the best
ones. This is just to whet your appetite.
Yeah, this is just the really whetting your appetite with, like, insane abstract concepts.
Uh-huh.
So... it turns out that this whole episode was being narrated secretly by Cable's computer in the future. She's been showing this on the little flat display of her Surface.
Yeah.
And Cable is like, no, not Apocalypse. And the computer's like, Apocalypse killed the X-Men, and that's why the future is being destroyed right now.
Right.
And I guess the computer explains why the X-Men destroying the plague is a problem. They say that because the X-Men destroyed the plague, future antibodies won't be created. So even though millions were spared in that timeline, future billions would be killed.
Right, because they don't have natural defenses against...
the plague.
Right.
But it's like, isn't the plague destroyed?
But some people are already infected. So, like, Creed and whoever he was infecting.
They make a point earlier in the episode saying that the plague is actually not... that deadly yet that it can, with rest it can be you can be cured of it,
right?
That they haven't stepped up to the next level of the lethal aspect. So I don't know, it's like another little paradox. Like, does the plague come back? Does Apocalypse bring back the plague? It's just like, I don't understand. And it's like, and if the plague comes back, wouldn't like antibodies be created at that point too? Like, why would everyone die?
It's like the long and the short of it is a way to explain that, like, that
why
Bishop
Cable,
going back didn't actually
that it was bad.
Fix things this time either.
And Cable has to now go back and fix things. And he, you know, the episode closes on that line. It's like, in order to save my world, I have to destroy a previous one. Or he says something like that. He says, I have to help Apocalypse.
Yeah.
And also establishes Cable's, like, unrelenting hatred of Apocalypse, too. He really hates Apocalypse. He's the general in charge of this war against Apocalypse overall. So, that's Time Fugitives Part 1, and it leaves on a cliffhanger. And, like I said, this is one of my favorite little mini arcs, little mini storylines. You know, season two, in my mind, is continuing on strong. Do you have any last thoughts on this episode?
No, like you said, it's a really interesting one, and it's nice that they made it into a two-parter, again, not just for continuity's sake, but also because it is exploring a lot of pretty complex and kind of outrageous ideas, so...
Right, yeah.
You know, it gives it, like, a little room to grow, and... excited to see what happens.
All right, cool. I just want to mention a few other non-X-Men related things right now. You know, we had some fun talking about Spider-Man Homecoming and things in, like, the greater superhero world of news. There's some other superhero news this week that caught my eye that I just want to mention and get your brief reaction to, and I'll give my opinion. So the first thing I read was that the box office returns for Spider-Man Homecoming thus far have been a little more tepid than perhaps Marvel and Sony would have liked. And that's kind of surprising, because I thought the movie was great, obviously.
Yeah, I thought it was really great, too.
You know, and I read somewhere that it hasn't... I don't think it's been released in China yet as of this recording, so maybe the Chinese numbers come in, it'll be bigger.
Yeah.
But, like, it did quick... It was only number one for 1 week, and then I think it very quickly got knocked off its perch.
Well, it's also coming right on the tail end of Wonder Woman, which was a big deal.
Well, Wonder Woman was huge all summer. That made a lot of money.
Right.
That
and
had
also,
a lot of legs.
Like, that was also a great movie, but, like, I think Wonder Woman really drew out a huge audience of people that were not necessarily even comic book fans
and Wonder Woman, and Wonder Woman had
fans,
it,
like, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, like, you know, it had the like a very large, like, feminist appeal, so it was kind of a different audience.
And we hadn't seen Wonder Woman before.
Right.
This is the third iteration of Spider-Man on the big screen.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
So maybe
thing
people
I was
are like, I've
too.
Seen Spider-Man, I don't care anymore.
Right. Except for, like, actual Spider-Man fans.
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of a shame because it's Spider-Man finally done right, at least in my opinion.
Yeah.
And he's back home with Marvel where he belongs.
Right.
And it has all the nice Marveliness to it.
Yeah, agreed. This was by far the best characterization of Spider-Man.
Yeah. And it's not like, it's not like the movie is like a flop. It's definitely, I think it's made like 400 $25 million thus far worldwide.
Okay.
On a budget of like $175.
All right.
But the thing is, they always say you have to double the cost of the production to include marketing. Like, marketing is usually like just as much as the production cost.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, 175 times 2 is just under like $400 million as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's made its money back.
Yeah.
Presumably, but not like it hasn't like made $1 billion. It doesn't look like it's on its way to $1 billion.
All right, well, yeah. You know.
Well, anyway, it's just kind of like, I think it'd be a bit of a shame if it's not as big of a hit as it was expected to be, because, like we both said, it's, like, the best Spider-Man.
Yeah, well.
And it was exciting.
We'll wish Spider-Man luck in China.
Yeah. Good luck in China, Spider-Man. And then there's two other DC items. We also enjoy the DC stuff as well. We're not, like, Marvel fan boys and girls, necessarily. We like it all. The first thing I read, I guess I just read it yesterday, was that Warner's and DC might want to get rid of Ben Affleck as Batman going forward. And that's kind of shocking. And that Ben Affleck himself, I guess, might have expressed some,
Affleck?
Like... Yeah, Affleck. How did I say?
Something else.
I don't know, yeah. he expressed his own weariness, and he's, you know, almost pushing 50 at this point, and it's like, he's already an older Batman than you might have expected.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the movies he appeared in sucked. Batman vs. Superman was bad.
Yeah.
And Suicide Squad wasn't good either.
I mean,
they both
Neither
made a lot of money.
His fault.
Yeah, no, he was decent. He makes for a decent Batman. Like, his characterization was nice.
Yeah.
His acting is good. Like, he strikes, like, a good, like, image of him. But, you know, the scripts were terrible. They're directed poorly. And he's definitely going to be in Justice League. I mean, that's what's surprising, that they think they'd get rid of... They want to get rid of him for the spin-off movies.
Mm-hmm.
The relaunch of the Batman series solo.
Right.
Which is surprising, because you're just starting this whole Justice League thing where it's all interconnected, and you're immediately going to replace Batman, like, kind of the most central...
I don't know if it matters, really. As far as Batman and Superman go, even Spider-Man at this point, it's like the character just kind of keeps rolling, but, like, they've changed out actors for, like, almost every movie, you know? So, I don't think it really matters.
I mean, you know, Marvel had a similar problem. They had to replace Edward Norton as the Hulk.
Right.
With Mark Ruffalo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Edward Norton was technically in the MCU universe, unlike the original Hulk with, I guess, Eric Bana was his name.
Yeah.
That was, like, the Ang Lee spinoff. I mean, not spinoff, but the Ang Lee solo version that had nothing to do with the MCU.
Yeah.
So, but Edward Norton presented Marvel with a problem, so they had to replace him. And they also had to replace the guy who played Colonel Rhodes in the Iron Man series with Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
You know, the War Machine character. So, I mean, they haven't been immune to, like, having to replace actors. But for the most part, they've been able to keep their, like, steady rotation of players.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't know. I just think it's, like, it's telling that to lose, like, the Batman actor is, like, a big deal. It's, like, a bigger deal than...
Well, what's telling about it exactly? Like, what does it tell?
Well, that the DC Warner's... movie studio is in a perpetual state of, like, they don't know what they're doing.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, Wonder Woman was a nice, like, bounce back return to form for them.
Yeah.
We both enjoyed that movie immensely.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, Batman vs. Superman and Man of Steel were pretty dreary, at least as far as the critics are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that as far as I'm concerned as well. So, you know, like, to shuffle out Batman this quickly, it's kind of, like, it's sad.
I'm not bothered. I'm hoping for greener pastures.
Yeah, no, but that leads into my next little item, which was that... So what happened, there's a tragedy where Zack Snyder, you know, his daughter... Let's just say a tragedy with his daughter. There's no need to really get into details.
Yeah.
So he had to leave finishing off the Justice League movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so they brought in Joss Whedon to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, Joss Whedon, the famous director of Avengers and of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and comic book nerd in general, like, he's, like, a good, like, guy to, like, to have a pinch hit to, like, finish this thing. And, you know, at first it was just assumed that, like, Joss Whedon would come in there and just sort of finish it. And he said, I think, publicly, oh, I'm going to do it in Zack Snyder's tone.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people, like, silently groan, like, oh, okay. But, you know, people feel bad for Zack Snyder.
Right.
But anyway, it turns out that Joss Whedon now is doing more than just finishing off the movie and polishing it off. They're doing way more extensive reshoots.
Right.
And then there's even, I don't know if this is still true, but it was reported that Zack Snyder removed all mention of Justice League from his Twitter profile.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, obviously DC Warner Brothers was not happy with Zack Snyder's, like, work in Man of Steel and Batman vs Superman. Like, they're, you know, they're not good. Like, mm-hmm. they didn't make the money they were expected to make, even though they were hits, but not as big as hits that they could have been, because they were just, people don't want to go back and see it again.
Yeah,
because
no.
It was like, you know, he didn't get the tone right at all. So, and that in itself has a lot to do with maybe with Ben Affleck being turned off to the series too, because he's like, ugh, these movies were a failure for me, I need to move on. But Joss Whedon is going back, and he's like now, like I said, apparently reshooting more.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's fully taking over this movie, and DC's like, well, Wonder Woman was this big hit, we have to make it more like Wonder Woman, i.e. have a story with like likable heroes that actually want to save people,
right,
without confusing transitions of like time and space.
Yeah,
you
make
know
the plot line actually
a logical plot line. Yeah. You know, some wit and humor and some spunk to it.
Uh-huh.
So I mean, Joss Whedon is capable of all of that,
right?
And Joss Whedon, he's going to direct Batgirl.
Yeah,
which I really want to see now. That excites me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Joss Whedon's coming in. Maybe he's, like, sort of rescuing the DC the DCCU, Cinematic Universe. I don't know what they call it.
Yeah.
And he's going to, like, make it more fun going forward. And speaking to what you said, like, that in itself might lend to, like, yeah, Ben Affleck, you know, go away, you know, like, let's,
yeah,
we're
well,
starting
not even that
again.
It's just like, all right, so like the franchise is moving on, so let's see what's gonna happen, you know.
Yeah, anyway, so those are just some like nice little superhero you know, news, information stuff. Oh, and one last one I noticed on my Twitter feed late last night before I went to bed.
Mm-hmm.
I saw another trailer for the new show Mutants.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's going to be the next X-Men show. Hmm. I don't know if it's going to be on Fox or FX, one of the two, I think.
Okay.
But I think Bryan Singer is going to have a lot to do with it, which is, you know, okay, whatever. He might be better for television than he is in the movies, because he's good at doing, like, the character moments.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so that's another mutant show to go along with Legion.
Hmm.
And, you know, as that show comes out, we're going to watch that and talk about that a little, too.
Yeah, I'll have to go watch that trailer.
Yeah, it was better than the first trailer, I thought. It was decent.
Okay.
There was, like, a line in there where they said, like, we don't even know if the X-Men are alive. And it's cool that they, like, I guess they're connecting it to the movies, and they're making you wonder, you know, where the show would fit along with the X-Men timeline in the movies. And, you know, Logan left things on such a ambiguous like end note as far as the whole franchise series is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So
I like that though, because yeah, it's not like an obvious cliffhanger. It's not like everything's
yeah,
tied
no,
up
it was just like
boat.
It was like the end.
Yeah, that's cool.
There's some children that survive at the end, spoilers, and that's it, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, the future X-Men movies that are coming into production, you've got Deadpool 2, mm-hmm, which features Cable, by the way. That's going to be huge.
Yeah.
I mean, cool. And Josh Brolin's playing him. And a cool, like, he's playing Thanos in the MCU, and he's playing Cable in the Fox X-Men universe, which
yeah,
is kind of, like, funny.
Yeah.
But that movie, I'm really excited for that. Big screen of Cable. I mean, mm-hmm, where are they possibly going to go with that? It's really interesting.
Yeah.
And then they're going to do, they announced that they're definitely filming the sequel to X-Men Apocalypse, which I guess, I don't know what it's called. It's like X-Men Phoenix or something, where it's going to be about the
actual Phoenix saga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that was bound to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good story arc.
I mean, it is. They didn't get it right the first time. X-Men 3 is bad.
Yeah, exactly. That's
you know, so, and not everyone was happy with the way the Phoenix was presented in X-Men Apocalypse, because it came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And nothing to do with the Shi'ar yet.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, they left it ambiguous enough, too, to, like, to connect it back to that stuff. But we'll see. You know, we'll see how good that goes. Like, I've said in a previous episode, the way I would have done it was, I would have made the Phoenix Saga a three-part series, where the next movie after Apocalypse, I would have called Giant Size X-Men,
mm-hmm,
where you can reintroduce a new Wolverine actor, have Colossus and, you know, and Storm, she's already been introduced, but, like,
yeah,
have some of those characters. So you have a movie called Giant Size X-Men. It's just more of, like, another generic, like, reboot outside of Bryan Singer in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But with those young actors who saw an Apocalypse, because they were good. And then the next two movies, it ends with the cliffhanger of the Phoenix. The second movie is Phoenix, the good Phoenix, where she's in the green outfit and saves the universe. And then the third movie is Dark Phoenix, where she's bad and in the red outfit, and they have to stop her.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I would have done it. It looks like I think they're cramming that all into one movie, which is like, okay, you know, that's what they do in the movies, I guess. It's
yeah,
like, but it's like, I don't know. It's like the... There's so much material. It's like you don't have to, like, shove it all into one film. I mean, that was the problem. I'm ranting here, but that's the problem with Batman vs. Superman. They, like, shoved in, like, you know, the forming of the Justice League, the introduction of Wonder Woman, the introduction of the Flash, the introduction of Cyborg, the Batman vs. Superman, the Dark Knight Returns comic, the fight between them, and the death of Superman and Doomsday all into one movie. It's like, those are like 10 different movies. You could have, and people wouldn't have minded them all spaced out. You didn't have to like cram it all into one extravaganza. Mm. It comes off as dumb. So I hope the X-Men universe is like, doesn't really go down that road, although it might be. So that's all the news we got. For the folks at home, I just assaulted Sonya with a lot of nerdy stuff, and she's losing her nerve a bit here, so maybe it's best to stop. So on that note, a reminder to join our Facebook group, X-Men Test Podcast. Join us there. Talk to us. A lot of great contributions this week from people. A lot of interesting, fun conversations about The External, the previous episode. Follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Rate us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave a nice review. That goes a long way to increasing our exposure. And so we just want to thank everyone again for listening.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Goodbye.